This edition of Sunday Night's Main Event is dedicated to the memory of Harley Race.
Right here is symbolic of what it's all about. This is the world's heavyweight title. And when I say this, I mean it in all sincerity. The world's heavyweight title, held by Harley Race. Not once, but twice. Over half of my life devoted to what I do better than any other human being in wrestling. I am not going to allow any human being to insult me or this. And when I say that, I mean it in dead sincerity. When I walk in that ring, I'm walking in there as world's heavyweight champion. I'm walking in there to defend what I hold probably more close than any other man has ever held. This is my life. You're looking at the world's heavyweight champion, the man that can truthfully say that he can beat any man in the world.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday night's main event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone, and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
1 week away from SummerSlam, headed to our town, AEW sells out once again, and we look back at the life and career of a wrestling legend. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Canada's premier wrestling radio show. It is Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio and News Talk 1290. My name is Jason Agnew, and this week, happy to be joined in studio once again by my regular NXT partner, a bartender, Dave. Dave, we're 1 week away from attending NXT and watching what is bound to be a very, very long SummerSlam. But we can at least be excited for NXT, right?
Oh, brother Jason, what a wild and wicked weekend we have in store for the Greater Toronto Area. Not only do I not have my kids this week, but you'll also see me at Destiny Wrestling on Friday, NXT TakeOver on Saturday, SummerSlam on Sunday. But is there any better way to kick off the weekend than Thursday night at Comedy Bar, 945 Bloor Street, for the premier wrestling-themed comedy show, Summer Strikes.
My goodness. Right off the top. Dave, big promo there. We're going to take a look back at this week's WWE TV on this week's show. Sure, we're going to preview SummerSlam, talk about Summer Strikes, NXT as well. And we're going to also welcome on Dan the Mouth Lebranski to take a more detailed look at the career of Harley Race, who passed away this week. Plus, Dave Meltzer stops by and Turnbuckle Trivia, ducking back into the SummerSlam history books. It is all coming up in the next 2 hours, so we shall take a break and then be back with the week in pro wrestling news. You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event.
Hey there, I'm Morty Jenkinson. When I'm not coaching the offspring in soccer, baseball, or wrestling, cutting the lawn, or playing taxi, it's shirts off, Crocs on, slather on the SPF 100, fire up the barbecue, and crank up the Bob Seger, while lounging in the kiddie pool, of course. Ryan Reynolds wishes he was me. Over my dad body pilsner from Great Lakes Brewery. Now available at your local LCBO.
What do Ring of Honor, New Japan Pro Wrestling, and Lucha Underground all have in common?
They're all booked better than WWE?
Well, yes. But the answer I was looking for is that they all sell merch at ProWrestlingTees.com. From Okada to Omega, CM Punk to Dalton Castle. And what better way to show off that you enjoy a good superkick party than by having it written on your chest? The best selection of wrestling merch anywhere is at ProWrestlingTees.com.
And now, your wrestling roundup on Sunday night's main event.
Welcome back to Sunday night's main event, and we unfortunately have to start this week with some sad news. As you heard off the top of the show with dedication, Harley Race passed away at the age of 76. Race had been battling lung cancer, and as we reported on the show a couple weeks back, he took a turn for the worse while on his way to Knoxville and had to be admitted to hospital and ultimately never left the hospital. We're going to have more on the life and career of Harley Race in the very next segment when our resident historian Dan the Mouth of Rance joins us for a segment to talk about him.
And well, despite not having TV yet and not having a pay-per-view for several weeks, there was a whole bunch of news coming out of AEW this week. First up, tickets went on sale Friday for their first weekly live TV show on Wednesday, October 2nd at the Capital One Arena in Washington, D.C. Despite some major Ticketmaster issues in the first 90 minutes of the sale, AEW continued their trend of their events selling out. This time, it took only 3 hours. Bet the WWE wish they had those numbers.
Yeah, you know, the novelty is definitely still there for AEW, which is definitely why they're still selling out. It's going to be interesting, though, as tickets continue to go on sale for weekly televised events now, Dave. I mean, it's very different when you're drawing one thing, you know, with one event every 3 or 4 months, as opposed to weekly. You're in a different town. Is the hype there? This is still a traveling show.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
for sure.
I considered going. I think Andrade's got tickets. I think he's refusing to take me.
Wait, to the Washington show?
Yeah, apparently his girlfriend, the love of his life, is a wrestling fan.
Oh, come on.
What's with that, huh?
No, I know.
Anyhow, along with that, though, AEW also announced that Cody versus Sammy Guevara will be the first match on that TNT show. They will also be crowning the first AEW Women's Champion that night. The women's belt itself will be unveiled at All Out, as in further details of how their first champion will be decided will be revealed on this week's Road to All Out special. Let's just hope they don't get too carried away with the Brandy TV heel character like we saw at the last show, because if she just decides to put that belt on herself...
Yeah, she's just Stephanie McMahoning herself.
Well, she's already Stephanie McMahoned herself a couple times, so I hope that that does not continue on here. I'm curious to see how they go about doing this.
Amen to that. And the main event of that first TV show will be a tag team match with Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks taking on Chris Jericho and two mystery partners. So let the speculation begin as to who it may be. Oh, I already know.
Who?
I already know.
Who?
We all know it's going to be RJ City and David Arquette.
Oh my goodness.
They were on Jericho's podcast. David was.
Yeah, so. That's true. There you go. So that's your prediction.
That's
RJ
my prediction
City.
Right there.
And, you know, a lot of people saying CM Punk and Pac.
Oh.
But no, you want RJ City and David Arquette.
Amen to that. And I love me some CM Punk, but I want RJ City on that show.
All righty. Flipping over to WWE now, we are 1 week away from SummerSlam. And yes, Toronto, you'll once again get to see Goldberg on the card. Despite the fact the WWE TV storyline currently stands at a Ziggler versus Miz match that will change this week. And we're going to see Ziggler versus Goldberg at SummerSlam, where I expect a spear and a squash. Because as we saw in Saudi Arabia, to expect any more from Goldberg is dangerous. Not necessarily to his opponent,
no,
but more so to himself. We're going to talk to Dave Meltzer about this later in the show, as he's the one that actually unintentionally blew the WWE's cover on Goldberg coming back to participate in this event. And it's funny, Dave, because the return of Goldberg, or some aspect of Goldberg coming back, actually happened here in Toronto at Survivor Series, which was the last pay-per-view they did about 4 years ago.
Yeah, that was the squash on Brock, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, that was something else.
That was fun.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Goldberg is best utilized in squash matches.
Yes.
So, I think Ziggler makes sense. You know, if nothing else about Ziggler, that guy sells fantastically.
Mm-hmm.
And him selling the spear, and he's small enough for the jackhammer, it can work. Do I want to see it? Well, I want to see it more than Miz.
No, that's a very good point. How many times have we seen that match?
Exactly.
It's ridiculous.
Exactly.
I just want to see Dolph Ziggler bump like HBK did for Hulk Hogan way back in the day.
Yes, which was a SummerSlam,
there
I believe.
You go.
There you go, bringing it all together.
We've got WWE Studios and Netflix are getting together to produce a sitcom called The Big Show Show. It'll be a live-action multi-camera comedy series and is slated for 10 half-hour episodes that will start shooting on August 9th. here's the show descriptor. When the teenage daughter of Big Show, a retired world-famous WWE superstar, comes to live with him, his wife and two other daughters, he quickly becomes outnumbered and outsmarted. Despite being 7 feet tall and weighing 400 pounds, he is no longer the center of attention. Now keep in mind, this is not a reality show, as no reality shows are actual reality shows.
But
it is a sitcom.
Right.
So this is not his real family. Everyone has been cast, and if you've seen Big Show act, this may not be half bad. He's actually very, very funny in person. And I'm sorry, who could ever forget him laughing at Bobby Boucher in The Waterboy?
Well, there was that, and you know what? I was very impressed when he made that appearance. On SNL, of all things.
Oh, my God, yes, with The Rock and everybody.
When he hid the entire chair behind his back. Big Show has some very strong comedic timing, and I'm curious to see, you know, how the actors work around him and how this works. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of a show, and I don't remember the name of it, but it featured Lyle Alzado.
I don't even know who that is.
Lyle Alzado was a football player turned professional wrestler, and there was a sitcom in the 80s, and I'm sure I even remember this show. I'm going to look it up right now. The show was called Learning the Ropes, and he was a high school teacher whose secret alter ego is a professional wrestler known as the Masked Maniac. I'm reading this off Wikipedia.
I remember this. Yes, I do.
The interesting thing about it, though, you know, I mean, you grew up here in Mississauga. I grew up in Etobicoke, and so the Toronto area was pretty much WWE-centric at that time.
Yes, very much so.
But this show ran in conjunction with working with NWA wrestlers, WCW wrestlers. So Flair was on it. I think Luger was on it. You know, guys like that. NWA wrestling stars were on it. So it was interesting to watch them in this sitcom. It was very short-lived. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. Let's see. We can actually click on how long this... It got 26 episodes.
That's pretty good.
So I'm curious to see, you know, if how Big Show's does, because it kind of reminded me of this. Learning the Ropes was actually Canadian produced. It aired on CTV and syndicated into the U.S. Huh. How about that?
Learn something new every day.
You learn something new every day, friends. All right, let's continue on here after that whole Big Show thing and get into talking about an unfortunate story here. Jerry Lawler has filed a wrongful death lawsuit against Hardin County, Tennessee, in regards to the death of his son, Brian Christopher Lawler. Now, Brian Christopher died on July 29, 2018 in a hospital when he was brought there after being found hanging in his jail cell. An investigation into his death ruled it a suicide. Lawler is seeking compensatory damages and punitive damages in an amount to be determined by a jury for numerous failures of the county and its employees that resulted in the wrongful death of his son. TMZ has reported that any money awarded from the lawsuit will go towards supporting Brian's son.
That's a sad story. But last week we reported that ROH has ended its relationship with NWA. Well, it seems that their partnership with CMLL is growing, though, as the two companies announced a Global Wars Espectacular tour this September. The three-date tour will take place from September 6th to 8th in Dearborn, Michigan, Villa Park, Illinois, and Milwaukee, Wisconsin, featuring both ROH and CMLL talent.
Now, someone who is no longer an ROH talent is Tennille Dashwood. That's right, the former Emma in WWE has signed with Impact Wrestling and will debut at their TV tapings in Mexico City in August. Also, Rhino, also known as Rhino, signed a multi-year deal with Impact Wrestling. Rhino, same name, just different letter in the middle of it, different vowel.
Oh, you lost me there. I couldn't even figure that out.
Yeah, because it's R-H-Y-N-O in WWE, R-H-I-N-O everywhere else. So they could copyright it in WWE.
Oh, right. Of course, of course. We also have Rachel Evers, her real name Rachel Ellering, a.k.a. daughter of Paul Ellering, revealed this week that the injury she suffered last week is a torn ACL. She suffered the injury at an NXT house show, and needless to say, she'll be out quite a while with this one.
Similar injury to what Mickie James did recently, and I believe the report on Mickie James was 8 to 10 months because it involved surgery. I would guess that Rachel's going
to
be going for surgery as well.
Tough one to lose. She's got all kinds of potential.
She does indeed. Defiant Wrestling, formerly known as What Culture, announced that it has folded as a result of the many independent stars no longer being available to book. And I could see a lot of this happening, Dave, because there was such an era of all of these great stars on the main roster, but as you've had AEW come into the fold, start locking people down,
yep.
There is the domino effect. You have WWE locking people down, ROH locking people down. And how do you run an indie organization when you can't really bring in any stars? Aside from Joey Ryan, who maintains his independence on the scene, you know, that's about it. He is all over because he's the one who can still be booked.
Yeah, amen to that. And for those of you that have been desperately waiting for the return to the ring of Enzo Amore, well, that day is finally here. Eric Arndt, I believe I'm saying that right.
Yep.
That's the former Enzo Amore, said that he will do his first match since being fired by WWE for Northeast Wrestling in Poughkeepsie, New York, on the show headlined by Jon Moxley versus Pentagon Jr. I can't wait to see who he pisses off at that event, or just the crowd for showing up.
Yeah, couldn't you just see Moxley just having enough of him and just decking him?
Yes, please, like, please, book it.
No, all complete shoot, just Moxley just gets tired of him and knocks this guy out. I have no idea how they get along, but you know, we mentioned that Joey Ryan is the only guy in the indie scene. Well, look, no, Eric Arndt, Enzo, he's available as well, promoters. If you would like a headache, he's there to give you one. That wraps up our week in pro wrestling news. Dave mentioned it off the top, but do want to make mention here. Of course, this week is absolutely and utterly loaded in Toronto with just a ton of shows that are happening, basically from Wednesday all the way through to next Tuesday. Yeah, the WWE stuff is happening. We know Ring of Honor is happening. You're going to Destiny on Friday,
yes,
right, Dave?
Yes, I am.
So that's going on. Smash is running a whole bunch. There are shows running all the time. There are a couple comedy shows running. On this show, I've had on Mick Foley. I've had on Dolph Ziggler. They're doing shows down at the Rec Room, which is kind of across from the Scotiabank Center there, Scotiabank Arena. Along with that, I'm doing one too. To throw it on out there, yes, indeed, Summer Strikes is happening. It is this Thursday. So Thursday is where we move the show to, August the 8th, 9:30 p.m. at Comedy Bar. That is 945 Bloor Street West. If you want tickets, you can get them at snmeradio.com. Now, I can't reveal what is exactly happening here. I mean, you know.
Ooh.
You know, Dave.
Yes.
I've been promoting. I just love the fact that we have Andrew Fung on the show, who's returning. He is on Kim's Convenience.
He's so hilarious.
His star is rising, and he is a very funny individual. Our champion, Marty Adams, is taunting people on our Facebook page, which is ridiculous. Gary Rideout is back. Scott Goldman is back. Hannah Hollyback, the first lady of Wrestle Strikes, is back. So we have a really great cast. There are a lot of people in town.
Yeah, tons.
Now, I don't want to promote someone and then say card subject to change. As of right now, I have two surprises penciled in.
Ooh.
That's all I can say.
Okay.
Two surprises penciled into the show. That's all I can say because there's lots of people in town. I'm not going to tell you who, but there you have it.
There you go.
That's all I'm going to say.
$20 in advance, people.
Yep.
Get there. Best show of the week.
Along with that, really, if you sign up for the patron and hit the comedy level, it's literally you pay $12 for the patron and you get a pair of tickets.
Perfect.
You can literally get a pair of tickets for $12 if you sign up for the patron. So it's patreon.com/snmeradio for that. Or tickets are available on the Comedy Bar website, comedybar.ca. Hit the calendar there. Or I have direct links available at SundayNightsMainEvent.com. As easy as that. We're going to take a break. We're going to come on back, and we're going to spend some time remembering the legend, the icon of Harley Race. Dan Lavransky will join us next. He has a whole bunch of memories of Harley Race, and along with that, he is very much a historian of wrestling, so we'll chat with Mouth next right here, Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
If you like to heckle, taunt, and boo, then you're going to love Two Strikes. Hello, wrestling fans, Jason Agnew here, and the first and third Thursday of every month, I'm the host of the meanest comedy show in Toronto, Two Strikes, where you, the audience, get to eliminate comics one by one till only one remains as the Two Strikes champion. Join me at Comedy Bar, 945 Bloor Street West in Toronto at Ossington Subway. For more information, visit comedybar.ca. Two Strikes. Don't you dare miss it.
Hi, I'm Bartender Dave.
And I'm Danny Williams.
And we would like for you to answer the call. The Call to Arms podcast.
The five-star rated podcast on iTunes.
And we talk about wrestling, but in a different way.
We're not just doing recaps of what you've already watched and digested.
And that's not a work.
And the best part is that it's all free.
It's the Call to Arms podcast, hosted by the award-winning Bartender Dave and Danny Williams.
Follow us on Twitter at Call to Arms Pod.
What you do in your life, you do with self-determination. I don't have all that great amateur background that 90% of the wrestlers today have. They told me, not only when I had the accident, that I wouldn't wrestle again. Every promoter in America, throughout the world, told me that I was not championship caliber because of that background. Well, I guess throughout the years that I proved to everyone in wrestling, whether they like me or dislike me, that I am made of championship caliber. I do what I've got to do to win at all costs. It may not be what you like, but it's a winner for me.
Thank you very much, Harley Race, NWA World Heavyweight Wrestling Champion.
It's good to be king, if just for a while. There in velvet, yeah, to give them a smile.
Welcome back to Sunday night's main event. That gravelly voice is unmistakable. You know it for one person in the world of wrestling. The wrestling world just lost Harley Race. Whether you knew him as the NWA champion or the king, or for longtime fans, handsome Harley Race. He had a very long career in the world of professional wrestling and will be remembered for a very long time to come. Here to chat about him, our historian on the show, also, of course, my co-host for pay-per-views, Dan the Mouth Lavransky. Hi, Mouth.
Hey, how's it going, Jay? Dave?
Oh, good to hear from you.
So, Mouth, obviously, this is a character. I mean, you were a big fan of Harley Race. I, however, you know, being a little bit younger, all I knew about Harley was I saw him as the King character when I was a kid in WWF, but there's so much more to him. Where did you first get to see Harley Race?
Well, again, Jay, because of where we are up here in Canada, you didn't get a lot of the NWA stuff when I was younger. So for me, Harley, again, another guy in the magazines. But he was featured so prominently, though. Like, you could tell even from just reading the magazines that he was one of the top guys. There was always big articles about his title matches in the NWA with Jack Briscoe and both of the Funk brothers. Even they would even have pictures from his matches against Giant Baba in Japan. And I would see clips here and there every once in a while on Mid-Atlantic. They would show clips or highlights from title matches and things like that. But yeah, he was definitely someone that I knew before he came in and did his run in the WWF. But you got to talk about, there's so much great stuff with Harley. Like, I don't know if you guys know this, but even early in his career, he had polio as a youngster, for one thing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Wow. He beat polio. He was in a devastating car accident in 1961 where he broke both his legs, and they were going to amputate one of his legs. And the promoter at the time that he was working for, Gus Karras, said no and stopped him. And the doctor said he'd never walk again. And he came back. By the accident was in 61, and by 64 he was back working for the Funks in Texas, and that's where his career really starts to take off.
Sorry, Dan, that car accident, that's the one where he lost his first wife, Vivian,
that's
as well, right?
Right?
Like, that was 5 weeks after the wedding. It was ridiculous.
They had been married for a month, and she was pregnant.
Oh, wow.
Like, you go through something like that, it's got to harden you like crazy.
And Dave, you're absolutely right. That's probably one of the things that made him so hard. Like, there are countless stories. You know, Andre the Giant said the only two guys he was afraid of was Ming and Harley Race.
Yeah.
You know, all the guys have, you know, all the older school guys have stories about Harley being the badass and being the legitimate tough guy. And there's no doubt that, again, the polio thing and this accident definitely would have hardened the guy. And those things came across. You played that promo, Jay. He had that great kind of slow, methodical style. Yep. He sounded mean. You bought what he was saying. You know, if he said he was going to take you out and he was going to beat you in the match, you bought into it, because again, he was in that era where a lot of guys just screamed and yelled all the time. And he didn't really do that unless it was warranted. But most of the time he talked in that great, slow, methodical, and I always thought he was so great at getting across that he was legitimately tough.
Well, a lot of people know him, and, you know, not only for the WWF run, which we'll talk about, but he stands out as an NWA champion. But let's go before that as well, because getting into his career, he spent some time as a tag team wrestler before yep. that.
Yes, that's right. With Larry, well, we know him as Larry the Axe Henning, but he called himself Pretty Boy Larry Henning, and we had Handsome Harley Race. They both had the dyed blonde hair. They were the classic kind of heels with the good looking. We're great. We're the top of the line. And yeah, that was in the AWA. They won the tag titles three different times. The first time was in January of '65 against the Crusher and Dick the Bruiser. And it was those years in the '60s of him tag teaming that really led to him becoming a prominent single star in the '70s.
And how did the transition occur, going from AWA to NWA at that time?
Oh, it was just basically one of those things. They'd kind of burned themselves out in the AWA. They'd been there a long period of time. The two of them just kind of decided to go in different directions, and Harley ended up in the NWA. And he was one of those guys that was, again, really well thought of. He was initially supposed to be a transitional champ for Jerry Briscoe. He beat Dory Funk, and he was only supposed to have the championship for a small period of time and then drop it to Briscoe. And he was so popular that he became one of the top guys, and he was so hated as a heel by the fans. And the NWA ends up going back to him constantly. I mean, he won the title eight different times.
Now, okay, so I have been watching wrestling since 1983, right? And
yep.
I didn't know Harley Race until he beat, like, Pedro Morales at the King of the Ring in 86. But in 83, that's when he was feuding with, Flair, right? He had that match at Starrcade. Now, like,
yes.
Would you consider, like, his greatest opponent Flair, or?
I would say both of the Funk brothers. Because they were just so huge at the time, and Briscoe as well. I would definitely say Flair for sure. Dusty as well. You got to remember he feuded and dropped the belt once to Dusty as well. So all of those guys in that era, and if you think of it for that time period, those are all the top guys. I should mention too that he did do matches in the WWWF. He fought superstar Billy Graham once. He fought Bob Backlund once. Here's an interesting fact, too. He feuded with Andre the Giant in 1978 and slammed him way before Hogan did.
Yeah, I saw that clip, actually. That was circulating. He slammed him outside the ring.
Yeah. Yes.
That clip was going around. Mouth, was he ever a babyface, or was he, I mean, predominantly a heel, correct?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jay. I don't, in all of my doings with him or seeing him, I do not remember him ever being a babyface.
Like when he was feuding with Ric Flair, you know.
Flair was the babyface.
Flair was the babyface. Oh.
Flair
there,
was
huh?
chasing the title, Jay.
Wow.
Remember, his first world title victory comes from Harley Race in the match that, Dave mentioned there, 83 in the steel cage match with Gene Kaniski as the referee. So Flair, they were doing the babyface thing with Flair where he's chasing and trying to win the title from the heel.
All right. Well, let's talk about, you know, I think the majority of our listeners being close to our age demographic and, you know, a lot of them rooted in Canada and the U.S., a lot of what we would have seen is the King Harley Race. And, of course, he was well beyond his prime at this point, but how did the transition come about going from NWA to being brought into the cartoony nature of WWF in the early 80s?
Well, basically what happened, Jay, is Harley Race had points in the Central States and St. Louis promotions, and he was trying to make a go with those, but he just saw that McMahon was steamrolling over everyone. So he basically, when McMahon approached him in 1986, he said, you know, would you come in? And he did. He came. It was basically because I think he felt McMahon was going to be the dominant promoter, so it's best I just go with that. But, yeah, he gave him the King gimmick. He never was a main eventer in the WWF, which was I always found startling. I thought the gimmick was kind of silly. I thought it was, you know, the thing that sticks in my mind when he first came in was that ridiculous thing with him and Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
The Slammies.
The Slammies.
Yes.
Exactly. Where they just wrestled through the whole show. And I always found it when I was young that it was so strange that here's a guy that, to me, looked like he was one of the top guys, and that McMahon really just kind of, it was almost like a joke what he did with Harley Race. Now, part of that might be, and I don't know, this is speculation, but back in 83, apparently McMahon tried to get Harley to no-show the title match with Flair at Starrcade and come to the WWF with the idea of Hogan beating him, and so he could say, oh, Hogan beat the WWF champ and the NWA champ. So I don't know, because Harley obviously didn't do that, I don't know if that was it or what it was, or if McMahon just felt that he wasn't deserving to be a main eventer because he was at the end of his career. I don't know. And the other neat thing, too, is apparently, because he did fight Hogan eventually. I don't know if you guys remember, there was a Saturday night's main event.
Yep. There was a table spot during that, and
that's
Race
right.
was
that's
injured,
actually
right?
Kind of the beginning of the end for Harley, because that gave him some pretty heavy-duty injuries, and he definitely starts to slow down after that point. But apparently, he didn't wrestle with Hogan for a while till he was in the promotion, because Vince was legit afraid that he would try something.
Because he was such a tough guy,
exactly.
And to turn things around on Hogan.
Exactly.
Well.
So, there's that there. So, yeah, he wrestles with Vince till about, late, not very long, because by 1990, he's in WCW.
Yeah, he went over to WCW, and did he wrestle there, or was it just a matter of going
to... It was just the manager thing. He managed the heel version of Luger. I loved him with Vader. I thought he was a great mouthpiece for Vader. And again, because he was a great talker and he was believable, so it was good to put him with guys like certainly someone like Vader, who's just coming in at that point as well. It was a great asset to have Harley Race associated with him, right?
Because this is kind of taking me off guard here, because like growing up watching WWE or WWF at the time, I was always legitimately scared of this guy. Like
of
even
Harley
like,
Race?
Of Harley
with
Race.
With the ridiculous purple crown?
It doesn't matter. This guy looked like a killer. Like his match at WrestleMania 3 with Junkyard Dog, I thought that was great. And like I always thought this guy could legitimately hurt anybody he wanted to.
Well, it's funny because I guess because I had already had the experience with him, I kind of always thought of the WWF period as kind of a joke. But, I mean, he did have great-looking moves that looked realistic. You know, he would do the knee drop. He would do the vertical suplex.
Yeah, the belly-to-belly he'd do was great,
the diving
too.
Headbutt, yep. You know, which guys like Chris Benoit ended up using later on. So yeah, he was a good guy, but I just don't think he really got treated properly by McMahon. And if you look at it, he's really not even in there for very long.
No. So what's his legacy, Mouth? I mean, you know, how will Harley be remembered?
I think he's going to be remembered as a legitimate tough guy. He's certainly one of the legends of an era of pro wrestling that doesn't exist anymore. You know, once Ric Flair passes, that's going to be it for that era of wrestling. That era of wrestling that was so different from what we see today is going to be completely gone. But yeah, he's going to be remembered as a legit tough guy. Terry Funk called him the world's fastest beer drinker and the world's fastest driver. There's tons of stories out
they
there.
They don't mix.
Well, at that time they did, probably.
Oh, you know it.
Yeah.
You knew the case of beer was in the back seat and they were, you know, drinking them and throwing the empties at stop signs.
Yeah.
There's a story that Bret Hart's wife, Julie, tells as well about Harley Race and his crazy driving. And remember this, too. I thought this was always cool. He used to have these yearly barbecues for wrestlers.
Oh, that's right. Whenever they came through and go to Kansas City, actually, you'd always expect Harley to be around on WWE TV.
Yep. Harley would always have these big barbecues. Apparently, you know, Owen Hart pulled one of his memorable pranks by substituting hot sauce for barbecue sauce on Harley at one point at one of the barbecues. But and I thought this is another interesting story I want to lay on you guys, too. Because, you know, we always talk about the Montreal screw job and how big a deal that was. Apparently, Harley had a screw job of his own. He told this story to Tom Pritchard. He had an NWA title match that was a chain match in Texas against this guy named Don Slayton. And Slayton, his gimmick was known as the master of the chain match. He'd never lost a chain match before. And apparently this guy tried to steal the title in the match and touch all four corners before Race did. And apparently he did that and then quickly just ran out of the ring before Race could do anything. And apparently, in front of all the fans, Harley just ran back to the dressing room, grabbed him, threw him back in the ring, wrapped him up in the chain, touched all four corners, and won the match.
Oh, wow.
So,
you know, there's also the story, and I didn't think about this until you mentioned Bret Hart's name and Owen Hart and that rib, but there was a story that Harley, I believe, told to you and I, Mouth, when we were doing those interviews back working with Live Audio Wrestling, and we had Harley on, and as you wrestling fans remember, the Owen Hart death took place at Kemper Arena in Kansas City. Harley was there. And he was one of the last people, if not the last person, to speak to Owen before he went out and actually said to Owen, do you remember this, Mouth?
Yeah.
He actually said, make sure your rope don't break.
Oh, Jesus. Yep.
When he went out, before he went out. And Harley told us that story when we did an interview with him years ago.
Yeah.
So there you have it, Harley Race. You know, we knew, sadly, we knew it was just a matter of time. Had been battling.
Yeah, he had a couple issues. He broke his legs and a fall in his home a couple years ago, I think, back in 2017. And then he was diagnosed with lung cancer earlier this year.
There you have it.
And I also want to mention quickly, too, he was a teacher. He had his own school.
Yes, of course. He remained in the scene. When he was driving to Knoxville, he was going to a show.
That's right.
Like, he remained in the scene until the very, very, very end, despite all of his health woes.
That's exactly right. He ran the Harley Race Wrestling Academy, Trevor Murdoch, Ted DiBiase Jr., Tommaso Ciampa was one of his students, Simon Gotch, Curtis Axel. And he also had his own promotion, which still exists. In fact, I think they had a show either this past weekend or they've got one coming up, WLW, yep. World League Wrestling. So, Funk was involved in, Harley Race was involved in all facets of wrestling right till the very end.
Well, Mouth, thanks for the bit of history on Harley Race. And next week, you will be back here in studio with me after we watch what I think is going to be a 17-hour SummerSlam show.
Jesus. There's what, like 10 matches, I think, announced already. So it's going to be another long night. Make sure you order extra pizza.
I shall indeed, Mouth. Okay. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks much.
All right, take care, guys.
That is Dan the Mouth Lavransky, the historian of the show. Yes, also my co-host next week here for the pay-per-view edition, the SummerSlam edition of the show. And yes, he and Joe Aguinaldo will also be doing an All Elite Weekly podcast this week for patrons, so you can get that at patreon.com/snmeradio. Taking a break, coming on back, let's talk about what happened this week in WWE TV. In particular, Trish Stratus returned. Did you like it? We'll talk about it next. Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind.
I'm Dan the Mouth Lavransky.
And I'm Joe Aguinaldo.
And we are the old f***s, two burnout wrestling fans that have been watching it since the 70s.
But now, All Elite Wrestling is here to make everything old new again.
So what better idea for a podcast to have it covered by two old crusty parts?
It's called All Elite Weekly, and you can listen to it by becoming a patron of Sunday night's main event at patreon.com/snmeradio.
And you can bet we'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly, because we're the old f***s, tough guy.
Hello, Gordy LeVac here. No one swings and hacks like I do, and no one struts quite like I do too, and no one brews beer like Great Lakes do. Canuck Pale Ale, my beer, your beer, our beer. Available in over 400 LCBO and grocery store across Ontario for only $2.80. Great Lakes Brewery, brewed for you, Ontario.
Wow. I mean, I expected more out of the 7-time women's champion. But you know what? I know what it is. Since the WWE has evolved and we're no longer models shaking their assets, we are women changing the industry. Trailblazers like me. I expected more of a competitive fire from you.
I respect you, Charlotte Flair. I think you're a hell of an athlete. You're an incredible performer. But right now, you're just being a You want your match at SummerSlam? You've got your match at SummerSlam.
Oh, oh, oh. Wow.
A little clip there of Trish Stratus and Charlotte and their confrontation on SmackDown. A welcome back to Sunday night's main event. We had heard this was going to be happening, Dave. Mm-hmm. We had heard that Trish Stratus was going to be making her return. To me, before we even get into what happened on that segment on Tuesday night, this seems rushed for me. Does it not seem rushed for you?
No, I completely disagree with
Why?
You. Well, of course. Okay, so yes, it's rushed. But I think...
Okay, you just...
No, you agree. No. Okay, no, I don't. Well, okay, just hear me out, people. Okay, so we've got... It's the story is told properly, even though it's rushed, because, like, Charlotte Flair comes out. She's the queen. She's not on the main card of the summer.
Sure.
And she's challenging this legend who's in the ring for... unknown reasons.
Okay, that's exactly it.
Yeah, I know.
Why is she there? Why is Trish Stratus doing a segment with Jerry Lawler in Memphis? Why is that even happening? That makes no sense. And I'll even give them that.
Okay.
I'll give them that, okay, Trish just happened to be there. And the lame excuse of she was on vacation and she couldn't make it to a Raw reunion. Everything was so scripted and awful in that segment, but we'll get to that.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, so you have her there, and then Charlotte just prances on out. I thought, and we're only 2 weeks away from the actual pay-per-view.
Right.
I would hope that Trish shows up sometime this week, and there's some sort of physical confrontation leading into this. I think the reason why I'm saying it's rushed is because I'm so disappointed. And maybe I'm very biased in regards to the way that I perceive Trish Stratus, because way back in the Live Audio Wrestling days,
right,
we did work together. Along with that, I've watched her host different specials here in Canada, and I think she is so, so talented and transfers over from being a wrestler to a television personality very well. That's why I question so much of what happened in this horrendous angle on Tuesday night.
I liked it.
Why?
I just did. I thought the little story that they had was good. Yeah, it was kind of lame that they had her out there, but like they bring out legends all the time, so why not?
I just thought that there was no real
storyline.
The storyline to get into this, it wasn't there. And WWE had the opportunity to have this.
Mm-hmm.
To have this, and it's gone now, because Charlotte is at her 8th championship. I think she's had 4. She's had the 9th, if you count the Divas. There's like the Divas thing, and then you had 4 of the Raw and 4 of the SmackDown. So Trish has had it 7 times, though.
Okay.
And if they had timed it out, where Charlotte has the belt 7 times, and Trish confronts her being the champion that has had it the most, and Charlotte defeats her, and it would even have been better if Charlotte was kind of at the babyface role and you did a babyface versus babyface match there, because you could have done the respect angle and you could have done the passing of the torch, basically, from Trish to Charlotte. And I really don't know if Trish had the torch, but she did have the women's championship the most. Not the longest, but the most amount of times. And that was something that she did almost like, not as much as Booker T, but you know what I mean? How Booker T walks for 5 times, 5 times.
Exactly,
Trish had it 7 times. And I really think they just missed the boat on that. And I don't see the psychology and the angle I just thought was so poorly put together here. And on top of that, what I also thought was put together poorly was the way Trish was scripted. I thought, as someone that I've seen is so talented with her promos, do you remember how great she was with the heel promos with Lita?
She was fantastic.
How amazing.
Yeah.
And she, whether that was a lot more of her or she was scripted better, I just thought that Trish seemed uncomfortable out there.
Well, it's been a long time, too. But, like, getting back to what you said, I'm sure that they wanted, like, they knew this was going to happen. And they wanted to do it at Raw Union or Raw Reunion or whatever they were calling
it. I don't think they wanted to do it at Raw Reunion. And I think it was better that they did not.
Mm-hmm.
Because, although, if you think about it that way, it actually would have made more sense if Trish had been there and Charlotte had confronted her.
Yeah.
That would have made a lot more sense.
Yeah, and I think that it was like
supposed to be.
It was supposed to be, but she actually was on vacation.
Okay,
you know, so
maybe it wasn't an
angle.
Yeah, maybe I watched this and didn't quite understand what was going on. I didn't buy into the confrontation. I think the match will be very good.
It's what I'm looking forward to most.
So on the SummerSlam card? That's what you're looking forward to the most.
Yep, I think so because I love Trish Stratus, and I think that they're going to have a fantastic match together, and I'm really excited to see how she does in the ring because I think they'll bring the best out of each other.
I could see that as well. I think that Trish is someone who's come back over and over again, and you know, I don't mean to be that you still got it, but you know, she has it.
Yep.
She keeps herself in such great shape as far as flexibility goes, and you know, of course, you know, it's stratosphere, yoga, etc., right?
Like, exactly.
So because of that, she's in great shape, and I don't think the ring rust takes as much effect with Trish as the others who might still be working out but not training in ring. So I agree. I'm very curious to see this. It's actually interesting because if you look at the SummerSlam card, this is actually another reason why I don't like it, is that Natty is challenging Becky on the card. And now Trish is back challenging. So if you're going to play the Canadian hometown angle out, I think by having Trish on the card, you overshadow the presence that Natty has on the card.
Yeah, totally. Like I said a couple of weeks ago when I was on, I don't buy her as a viable contender at all.
Natty,
yeah. And this just, like you said, it totally just throws a blanket over top of her.
Yeah.
Because I'm sorry, if anything, like, yeah, Charlotte versus Trish is great, but I'd love to see Trish versus Becky. Yeah, now that's what they should have gone with. But she's not back full time, so you can't have her winning a title.
It's funny. I mean, it was many, many years ago. It would have been Trish came in and did a segment with me on Byte Television. You can still find it if you want. It's out there, the two of us sitting on the couch together. Anyhow, and she said at that time she wanted to do a bit of a comeback and she wanted to work with Natty. She was interested in working with Natty. And to my recollection, that never did happen because she took a whole lot of time off. Not to say that I think that would be the right program. I think she's in the right spot now, but I think it's the wrong time. Because it does, you're right, throw a blanket over top of Natty. Now, Natty this week, if you want to segue over to that angle... Okay. What a weird promo on Monday night with Natty saying she wanted to challenge Becky to a submissions match, but didn't think Becky would accept, so she's not going to put out that challenge.
Yeah, I didn't understand this at all.
Like, is this supposed to be... So is this the type of Paul Heyman-style booking where we're now supposed to think she's not going to make the challenge, so the heel... Like, she's basically, it's reverse psychology, right?
Yeah.
It's, I'm not going to challenge you to do it because you won't do it, and then Becky will appear this week and go, you know what, I'm going to do it. And it could very well be a submissions match.
Well, yeah, and it would make sense because they both have submissions for finishers. Like, why wouldn't it be that? So it didn't make any sense to me whatsoever. I was watching it going, what? Okay.
And along with that, when you have a submissions match... In a title match opportunity taking place in Canada involving a sharpshooter.
Ooh, are we still beating that dead horse?
WWE.
Yeah, they are. Yeah,
will beat right, a dead horse till it is 6 feet under, and then they will still keep going.
Oh, that poor horse.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Screw job.
Yep.
I don't want it.
Yeah.
I don't want it. But
is Brett going to be involved in the screw job?
Brett might be too busy giving out the AEW title.
Oh, yes.
I'm not sure if he's in town. I will say I have heard a rumor that Brett is in town. And I don't know what he's being brought in for or what's happening or if he's even working with WWE. There's so much going on outside of WWE that there's a bunch of guys coming to town that are not necessarily appearing on a WWE show but are still coming into town. All right, so looking at SmackDown, and let's stay with that, even though we segued off to Raw a little bit. The Kofi Kingston-Randy Orton promo package that happened was my highlight of the show.
How so?
Well, the whole stupid.
The classic.
For those of you that don't remember what happens here, because I had to look it up. My memory's pretty bad, and everything blends into one another. So this harkens back to a three-way that these two had. So it was Orton, Kingston, and John Cena on Raw, where apparently Kofi took an RKO and was supposed to stay down and take a punt kick for the finish, but instead he got up, so Orton had to hit the second RKO for the finish, and Orton was pissed, and... he called Kofi stupid. That's the clip that you're seeing there.
Yep.
And Kofi's push at that time was halted, even though he was supposed to be on a fast track to winning Money in the Bank at that time.
He was so super hot right there, too.
This
super
comes
hot.
Full around now.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Orton and Kingston. And I guess the guys had some real heat behind the scenes. I suppose they're over it now. But the fact that they've taken this angle that turned into a real life situation and have now turned it back into an angle and used it in that promo and continued to use this whole stupid thing.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed that promo package. And I'm a guy, Dave, that does not enjoy Randy Orton.
No?
No, I don't like Randy. He doesn't seem motivated.
Oh, I like Randy. I think that's his character. He doesn't need to be motivated.
Well, that's what he's playing out here.
Yeah.
And I mean, that is exactly what they're playing out here, is he doesn't have to be anything except Randy Orton. And Kofi has had to be so many different things.
Yep.
This, unlike what I just said about the Trish and Charlotte angle that I find very forced, this I find very smart and intelligently and well put together. Ultimately, am I going to be interested in what happens in the ring between these two guys? Are you looking forward to this?
No. I like Randy Orton and I like Kofi Kingston. I got to see the WrestleMania win live. I thought it was fantastic.
For Kofi, yeah.
But the run is lackluster and I'm not...
The Kofi run?
Yeah, I find it.
So do you... I don't think it's off him here. I mean, this is...
I do.
You think that Randy Orton... You got to hold to this when we do the six-pack challenge this week.
No, I forgot about that. Okay.
Well, you don't have to, but you'll contradict yourself. By the way, I will let people know now, as we get into this, the six-pack challenge, due to the passing of Harley Race, I wanted to do more of a focus on Harley with mouth on this show. So the six-pack challenge in which Dave will take on Mark Andrada, that will be a Patreon special that will come out in the next couple days. I think I'm going to put it up on Tuesday. So there you have it. If you want to hear the six-pack challenge, it'll be Dave and it'll be Mark, and it will be happening on the Patreon. So by all means, go ahead, patreon.com/snmeradio. Let's take a break. Let's come back. We're going to speak with Dave Meltzer about some of what we've talked about. Then we'll get into, and that'll be the start of our second hour, plus Turnbuckle Trivia. We'll talk NXT as well, since that's where you and I are going to be going to.
Can't wait.
Very good. It's Sunday night's main event. You're listening to it on TSN Radio.
Sipping whiskey out the bar, not thinking about tomorrow. Singing Sweet Home Alabama all summer long.
Thanks for listening to Sunday night's main event. If you'd like to hear the second hour of the show, it's available right now at patreon.com/snmeradio. Contributions start for as little as $4 a month, which works out to a buck a show if you're just listening to the weekly show, but we'll also throw in all of the bonus content, including the Patreon-exclusive podcasts. So visit us right now at patreon.com/snmeradio.